Welcome into the UT Baseball Show. I'm your host, Anthony, and we are glad you're here for another week of baseball talk. And today we're exploring a topic that is getting a lot of buzz around the baseball community. Simply put, we're asking the question, what's the deal with all these pitcher injuries? Now today, unfortunately, Parker cannot join us as he is being a responsible adult and fulfilling a work responsibility. But don't worry, Adam and I are here to talk pitcher injuries and be fully irresponsible. Adam, it is good to have you back. I feel like I really just kind of traded you guys out.
It is great to be back. I was unwell for a while there. It affected everything in my life. I couldn't go to work, and people who know me know that I love to go to work. So that was a struggle. But I did listen back to the episode, Anthony. I loved your episode that you did with Parker by yourselves. The one thing that was missing was me there keeping you both accountable for the teams that you both support. So it's all right. We can move on, but I'm ready and happy to be back.
Well, of course, Adam, if you are just following the show, is our resident winner as the Rangers fan. Unfortunately, Parker and I are dealing with socks that are quite dirty pair of socks. But happy to jump into today's topic, mainly because it's been a buzz around baseball pitcher injuries. And we're going to spend some time today talking about the spike in pitcher injuries. How has it happened? Why is it happening? What does it all mean? And what impact is that going to have for our great game? But before we get into that, we're going to start our show like we always do, and that is with our scouting report, where Adam presents a trivia question, and it's up to Parker and I, or I today, to provide an answer by the end of the show. So, Adam, go ahead and give us today's scouting report.
Anthony, today, because it's only you, I'm going to expand the question ever so slightly from just a single answer. And we're going to talk pitches, specifically the vaulted perfect game. Can you give me three pitchers who have completed a perfect game?
Okay, first off, I love that Parker leaves and you give me an extremely hard one. It's not extremely hard. Like, I can already tell you there's two that popped into my head, so I'm two-thirds of the way there, which is great.
I believe in you, Anthony, and as the captain, you should be setting that example, leading from the front and having that core knowledge base. Thank you, good sir.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That is a good one, Adam. Looking forward to wrapping that up here shortly. We'll get back to that scouting report. But I want to get into it, Adam, because like I said, a lot has been going on in regards to pitcher injuries. I'm kind of glad we're talking about pitcher injuries, because a couple weeks ago we talked about kind of what goes into developing a pitching rotation, and we learned a lesson. We got really excited about lineups, and we really didn't give pitching rotations much of much love. So we're revisiting pitchers here, but we're visiting them in not great terms, because what we're seeing certainly over the course of 2023 and 2024 is an increase in pitcher injuries, where you have pitchers that are going under the knife, getting Tommy John ligament surgeries because they're hurting themselves throwing on the mound. And we're going to get into what all that means, kind of kind of what goes into all of that, of course. But just from your perspective, Adam, I mean, you're seeing guys go out for full seasons, right? I mean, and all-star players, Spencer Strider, Gerrit Cole, Sandy Alcantara, all these guys that are premier pitchers in our league have recently lost full seasons because of pitcher injuries. Like, when you see something like that, what is your first impression when you see these news stories popping up about pitcher injuries?
I think the first thing that I think of is that there is a definite problem with pitchers, and there's a definite problem with the spike in injury. And I've done a little bit of research into this over the last couple of days, and I feel like this might be the culmination of years of youth development, years of high school development, years of college development. And I think what gets a pitcher paid at the end of the day, and I think it's all culminating in, and we'll talk about it later on, but, you know, everyone wants velocity, everyone wants spin, and these pitchers are just moving their elbows in ways that those elbows should not move. You know, I've never been a pitcher, but if I try and throw a ball really far, my elbow hurts for a few seconds after, and I can just imagine what it's like for them to do it in a way that the body was not built to do, and to do it over the course of an hour or two. Just tough.
It is tough. You said a lot of important things there, and I want to start with talking about what it takes to actually pitch. Now, of course, you and I, Adam, are coming from a place of having zero experience pitching. Okay, I don't want to say zero experience. I pitched when I was in Little League, but that's definitely not the same. And here's why it's not the same. Kind of what you're saying, right? I mean, you have pitchers that are pitching four-seam fastballs in excess of 95 miles an hour. So I have a test for folks out there. The next time you're at a ballpark, odds are at that ballpark, maybe they have a kind of test your pitch speed where you go up there, you throw a pitch as a layman or a laywoman, and you go there and try to see how fast you can pitch a ball. Most people that do that aren't getting above the mid-50s. Think about that, right? All your might going up there throwing a ball, you're not going to get more than in the mid-50 miles per hour. So these folks are doing it for 180 innings, 200 innings a season, anywhere between 60 to 100 pitches a night. And we'll go over some stats about kind of how many fastballs are really being thrown in the last several seasons. But what it's taking to throw that pitch off a mound at 60, essentially 60 and a half feet from home plate, that's a lot of exertion, like you said, on muscles, on our anatomy. That is just not a natural human thing. And that's something that is very real. Now, I will say, you talk about high school, colleges coming up and trying to groom pitchers. There is something to be said about selling out for velocity, right? And, you know, you had pitchers back in the day, your Greg Maddux of the world is a prime example of this, where he never killed you with velocity. He killed you with being able to locate his pitches, paint the corner, get you guessing, and had some incredible break on his pitches. But Greg Maddux and pitchers of the 60s, 70s, 80s, even into the 90s, they did not kill you with velocity. And something changed in the sport to get us to a point where, from folks at a younger age, they're groomed to get that fastball up as high as they possibly can get it as far as speed. So I want to come back to kind of your perspective on this, particularly as a Rangers fan. The reason I ask is because you have two gentlemen on that team, and this is very close to your sphere, because there's two folks on your team, Max Scherzer and Jacob deGrom, who are injured as we speak. Jacob deGrom is a very extreme case of someone who has had multiple pitcher injuries, particularly with his arm. So this has got to hit home for you in a particular way.
It does. It's hard. I've never seen Jacob deGrom throw a pitch, and it's tough for me because all I hear about is how good he is and the potential of him being a Hall of Fame inductee one day, just from his skill. But I just haven't seen it. I don't know how to comment on that. And Mad Max, I think it's a little bit different for Max, in my opinion. I think age is starting to catch up to the rabid Wolverine. And,
yeah,
you know, he's having issues with his back. And I know that we're talking injuries to elbows right now, but I think father time is always a variable that we need to consider. And, you know, that we also brought in Tyler Marley this year, who was injured. So I look at the Texas Rangers rotation, and it's gutted. We lost Cody Bradford recently. We called up Jack Leiter. We're going to talk about, you know, what do teams do when they lose starting pitchers, and that's what we've done. And then he got banged around a little bit. It's tough, and I'm just waiting for the second half of the season when hopefully Jacob deGrom is back, Mad Max is back, Marley's a bit closer to being healthy, but it is. It's probably the worst thing about being a Rangers fan, Anthony, is everyone laughs at our starting rotation and at the luck that we have in not being able to keep it healthy.
And you're not the only fan that's experiencing that. Like I said, we have a number of pitchers over the last couple of years that have seen these more extreme injuries. And just to clarify, I mean, a lot of these injuries that we're talking about have to do with ligaments in elbows, and particularly the UCL. So when you're often reading news about pitchers having injuries, you're hearing about their UCL, which is a particular ligament in the elbow where, as Adam was alluding to, you put wear and tear on that ligament can tear. And quite frankly, there have been studies done on how much a UCL in the human body can take. Turns out, it's not a lot of 95-mile-an-hour fastballs, as it turns out. That wear does actually happen. Now, I bring up Jacob deGrom also for a very specific reason. Now, to give people kind of the context of kind of the magnitude of what we're talking about here, Jacob deGrom is one of 22-plus surgeries or injuries that have occurred in the last couple seasons. So if we go back to 2019, okay, so you're looking at 2019 to 2023, we have a significant list of 22, let's just keep it to elbow injuries. Some of these names are going to be familiar to a lot of you if you've even watched the sport a little bit. Jacob deGrom, Hunter Green, Spencer Strider, Sandy Alcantara, Noah Syndergaard, Garrett Cole, Nathan Eovaldi, Yuri Perez, Grayson Rodriguez, Shohei Ohtani, Zach Wheeler, Luis Castillo, Drew Rasmussen, Tyler Glasnow, Shane McClanahan, Dylan Cease, Jesus Luzardo. It goes on and on and on. All of these guys have at least been out for elbow inflammation due to strain, and at the very most have gotten Tommy John surgeries. And Tommy John surgeries, folks, in the sport of baseball, this isn't something you go to the doctor in a couple months, you're back. Unfortunately, it's a long injury. People are gone for at least a full season, sometimes a season and a half. And if your recovery doesn't go well, you're missing the sport for even more than that sometimes. And it really is a huge hit to someone's career and takes them off the field for an extended period of time. Now, all that being said, the conversation we're having now, Adam, as we're seeing throughout the baseball community, is why? Why is this happening? Because pitcher injuries have always been a thing. As long as humans have been throwing baseballs, you get injured. But why is it increasing over the last couple of years? And so I want to have an open discussion about that. And you kind of had spoke to velocity earlier. Is that, in your eyes, the only thing that's driving it? Or do you see other things that potentially drive this?
I think it's a main driver of injury. I do think that, like I said, it's a bit of the precipice. I think we've been moving in this direction maybe for a few years now, and the emphasis placed on velocity at the younger level is something that could attribute to it. You know, I did see the Players Association drop a statement regarding the pitch clock, which is great for us fans. However, it looks like the players do look at that as a potential concern moving ahead with their injuries. I think the MLB probably could have dealt with that statement a little bit better, but I think that's a story for a different day. And why I think that the velocity and the spin and these different types of pitches, these, you know, cosmetic pitches, if you will, is that the offensive lineup, they're getting better, right? Our batters are getting better. They're able to identify pitches more regularly. They're able to get on base more regularly. They're able to hit a homer, for example. And I think that if the offensive lineup gets better over time, then pitches tend to have to evolve with the time that they're in as well. And I think that that's also maybe moved coaching direction in a particular way. You know, for velocity, for me, as a new fan, does that mean if they're hitting the ball more, let's just throw it faster? Example. So, and I will say too that there are pitchers that can operate at a high level when it comes to velocity. I look at Aroldis Chapman of JG's Pittsburgh Pirates, raise it, JG. You know, he regularly throws above 100 miles an hour. I think his control suffers for that, but he doesn't carry many injuries, if at all. His body is just able to do it. And I think he might be an outlier for the point that I'm trying to make, but, you know, throw him in for a devil's advocate point of view. But For me, it's, yeah, velocity, the changes in rule to make the game of baseball, the business of baseball, more enjoyable to bring fans in. So I think, you know, for the pitch clock, for example, my analogy is if we would go to the gym, Anthony, and we're there to do strength training and we do certain sets and we have a prescribed break, the pitch clock for a pitcher, in my layman's view, is that their rest time is cut in half, for example. So they're doing more reps with less rest. And I can see why the Players Association takes the stance that they do. And that's, yeah, that's what I think about the causes from my beginner's mind.
And those two are very valid things to bring up. And I want to go back to your Roldis Chapman comment, because I think it inherently brings up another potential cause. And that is, when you look at a Roldis Chapman, well, he's a closing pitcher, and you're going to see him at the end of a game pitching one inning, maybe every other day, getting three outs. He doesn't get injured because his workload is so much less, right? Now, you look at some of these other starting pitchers, like that list I just read off. Here's the crazy thing about that list I just read off. All those pitchers that have all those injuries of that list of 22 I just read off, they all have four-seam fastballs that are higher than 96.5 miles per hour. That's nuts. And those are all starters. So those are guys that are pitching, you know, instead of Aroldis Chapman maybe pitching anywhere between 40 to 60 innings, it or not even. Aroldis Chapman, if you're a closer, you're probably even pitching closer to 40 innings. But if you're a starting pitcher, you're looking at 120, 150, 200 on the high end if you're consistent. Like, do that at 97, 98 miles an hour that much, absolutely that could be a part of it. The workload itself could be a part of it. Now, you look at not even the workload of miles per hour, but you look at how often pitchers are actually throwing heat now more than ever. And, you know, I got to give props to Tom Verducci. You know, if you're really looking to get into this more and get a good overview of this whole issue, Tom Verducci of Sports Illustrated wrote this great article, actually the beginning of this month, and this article titled "There's a Clear Route to the Injury Issues Plaguing Pitchers," again by Tom Verducci. Highly recommend you check it out. And in here, he has some great data for us. So one of the data points I think is the most fascinating that he highlights is the increase at the top of that velocity range is insane. So pitches I'm talking about that are 100 miles an hour and higher. So the number of pitches thrown 100 miles an hour or more has tripled, more than tripled, in just 5 years, from a little over 1,000 pitches in 2019 to almost 4,000 in 2023. That is insane to me. Like, your point of velocity being such a large part of being a starting pitcher in this sport, that is a huge signifier that that is the direction that we're going.
Yeah, and just to add on that, Anthony, I think when I talk about velocity, that's, I'm kind of thinking about it now, and it's, you know, throwing at, quote, max effort for a prolonged period of time and then without rest. I think that's, for me, the main problem, and velocity falls in that, the pitch clock falls in that. So if I was, yeah, an umbrella statement, max effort for too long, would be my statement of the day.
Yeah, that's, I mean, so that, if we're keeping a running list, there's a couple things that we're talking about there. So we've already talked about certainly velocity. We've talked about workload being a component. We talked about the pitch clock really kind of contributing to all of it potentially, but definitely there's all connected theme here, as you say. But then there's something else, because as a part of all of this that's gone on the last couple of weeks, obviously, if you go on X, you hear about it from everybody. And there was a resurfaced video of now Los Angeles Dodgers starting pitcher Tyler Glasnow. And at the time, he gave an interview when he was with the Tampa Bay Rays talking about that transition that the sport made in 2021, telling pitchers that they could no longer use kind of sticky substances to grip baseballs. Now, this was kind of a big deal for pitchers. If you've been following the sport for a while, you've heard about this. If you're new to the sport, let me catch you up. Pitchers need to grip the ball, right? When you are watching a game on the TV, you see that little kind of like pouch on the pitcher's mound. That's full of rosin. And rosin is helpful for pitchers to grip the ball. And oftentimes, you see pitchers that will mix rosin with water, sweat, sunscreen to help it even grip more. There was a substance that was being used by pitchers for some time up until 2021 called Spider Tack, which was extremely sticky. It's equivalent of like a batter using pine tar to grip their bat. So in 2021, MLB came out and said, can't do that. Why can't they do that anymore? Because the increased grip to that degree, it being so sticky, increased spin rates on pitches. And if you have a higher spin rate, your slider's looking a little ridiculous. And with an increased spin rate, your breaking balls are breaking like crazy, hugely impactful for pitchers. They had put a stop to that in 2021. This Tyler Glasnow video essentially said Tyler was making the argument like, hey, we don't have that. And it has allowed us, or has forced us rather, to grip the pitch more. And so not only are you throwing at 95 plus miles per hour, but when you're holding a ball in your hand and you have to grip it at essentially squeeze it harder to grip the ball, that actually puts stress in your arm as well. And I thought that was a very interesting argument on his part.
No, I definitely think that's a really interesting argument, and I have seen the interview. And more importantly, when I did, I went and had a look at Tyler Glasnow's injury history, and it's very interesting. You know, pre-2021, there was one notable injury, but post-2021, he's had numerous injuries and has been plagued and has struggled to hit a certain number of innings and pitches since the change, because he clearly needed that assistance. And now without it, he's being required to throw at max effort, velocity, putting as much spin as his body's able to put into it. And I think that it's affecting him. And I've just quickly brought up his injury history as well. Two of those injuries were elbow related, and they were the first two post the change in rules.
And there is a correlation. I mean, it's hard with any of this, right? You can't come out and say, hardly ever, that this one thing caused this, X caused Y. Well, in this case, this is a correlation, because that was banned, Spider Tack, in 2021. And some of the biggest changes we're seeing happened to be from 2021 onward, and especially in 2023 and 24, which is the whole impetus of this conversation. So, all that being said, I think you and I agree, Adam, as much as, you know, the MLBPA, the MLB Players Association, wants to come out and say, oh, it's the pitch clock. We voted against it. MLB wanted it. So that's the part of it. Whether it's Tyler Glasnow saying, oh, well, maybe it's the Spider Tack thing because we can't grip the ball. Tom Ferducci here is making a very research-based, cogent argument about pitch speeds, which I think you and I agree on heavily. But I think we also agree, and, you know, when we ask what's the deal with it, well, the deal is it's a lot of things. And these things together have changed the way pitchers pitch and therefore changed the type of wear and tear they're experiencing on their bodies.
Yeah, and I think what makes it tougher too is that the pitching community also in their own way is having a debate. You know, I saw a quote from Houston Astros legend and enemy of my beloved Texas Rangers, Justin Verlander. He commented that he doesn't see it as the pitch clock. He sees it purely as velocity and spin. So there's a debate going on within that community as well that we should probably be aware of, and that there's no one right answer here.
100%. And I'm happy you brought up Verlander, because I was watching that actually this morning. That popped up on my feed as I was prepping for the show. And I almost liked the way he presented it in his argument the best. But that debate that you're talking about, folks, it's not even a debate happening with pitchers in the sport. It's clearly happening in the front offices, right? Because they're trying to think about, how do we best prep our roster for something that seemingly is now inevitable? And so here in a moment, we're going to transition to talking about what does this mean for the sport? How is the sport going to change? How could it change if this continues and we see this increase in pitcher injuries? But before we do that, want to share a couple messages with you. And first, you know, if you love to work, if you love the work we're doing here at Youtini, we have so much can't miss great content, and you definitely don't want to miss the Youtini Show, our ultimate gateway to exploring fandoms. If you've been a part of our community for some time, you're familiar with the guys that brought you the Living Force podcast: Corey, Eric, Charles, Wes. Well, I'm excited to share that the crew is back. They've been back, and they're better than ever, if you could believe that. And they're talking their favorite fandoms. They're exploring those that they're curious about, and they're exploring those that maybe they're already deep into. You never know what you're going to get when those guys get together, so be sure that you are tuning in to the Youtini Show every Monday on the Youtini YouTube channel, and get ready to expand your fandom. And let me tell you, they've already had some really great conversations that I really got a kick out of. They recently talked about the prequels. They most recently talked about Taylor Swift, which, if you're a Swiftie, I love Swift. A lot of people love Swift. You're going to want to watch that. So definitely join the crew and make sure you're tuning in every week to the Youtini Show.
Wouldn't agree more, Anthony. I didn't know how much I missed the Living Force until it, one, went away, and then two, it rebranded and evolved into the Youtini Show. So I'm stoked to have it back. And what else is great about our community, and I'll use the word community and quote that for now, is through Discord. In Discord, we stay connected as fans, as the United, and you, as the community, as our fans, can get in touch with the Youtini crew, your fellow fans, and beyond. You'll have access to more opportunities to connect with the fandoms that you enjoy and the fandoms that you love. Not only do we have our own baseball channel, which is where you'll see Anthony, Parker, and I operating in daily, and you don't want to miss Parker's Sunday trivia drop, but our Discord community includes something for everyone. Star Wars, naturally, a foundation of where we came from. Avatar, movies, TVs, books, you name it, we probably got it. And if we don't, hey, we're open to change. So don't wait. Go to youtini.com, reach out to a member of our team to get access to the Discord and expand your fandom.
Thanks, Adam. All right, let's talk about this a little bit. We've kind of outlined what is going on, the current state of things. We have this increase in injuries, and inevitably, now that we have seen this increase in injuries, and I think you and I both agree it's a number of things causing it, what does that really mean for the sport? We've talked a little bit, and you kind of hinted to it earlier, about, you know, the pitching depth for the Rangers, you know, coming from your sphere. You have a lot of folks that historically in the last couple of years have gone on the injured list, the likes of Scherzer and DeGrom and even Eovaldi, all of those folks. But for you, and you, when you think about the current state of this, let's just assume that this doesn't get better. Let's just assume, for sake of conversation, that this is how it's going to be going forward. How do you see that impacting the sport and how GMs approach building out a team?
Well, the most important thing in my mind that a GM needs to do, and is he or she, like, they need to put forth the strongest 26-man roster they can to ultimately win it all. And part of that is to build the strongest starting pitching rotation within your financial means. And if we've seen anything over the last two seasons, is that these injuries are not only making it hard for the team to win, but I can imagine it's just making it hard for the front office to do really anything of note. And they go to all the trouble of bringing in these star ball players. Like, for example, DeGrom came in on big money, through for a little bit, and has been down since. And, yeah, you know, I am pro-labor, so I'm all in for it. Let's pay that man the money and get him back. But I think from a front office and business point of view, and my own personal background, is that questions probably start to be asked. And, you know, for me, it goes two ways, Anthony, is that they need to support their team and win, but they also need to look at what's best for the business moving forward. And And how do you construct a roster when you lose someone? Do you dip into your minor leagues? Do you dip into your prospects? Do you trade? What's the best outcome? And I talked about it before, is that we brought up Jack Leiter recently when we lost Cody Bradford, who was on a bit of a tear, to be honest, really showing his stuff in 2023, and really quite heartbroken to see him go down when he's finally getting a chance to prove himself. But questions were asked, is Jack Leiter ready? Because his minor league stats were not great. However, what other choice did we have, right? And we brought him up, and unfortunately, the opponents kind of smacked him around a little bit. And I think the MLB community expected it to happen. But again, the flip of the coin was, what else could the Texas Rangers have done differently?
That's a really good point, because when we talk about the effects of this, there is a very clear effect on these younger players, where their hands are kind of tied, and being able to bring someone up to fill a roster spot, because you have 162 games to play, but someone may not be ready. And Jack Leiter is an absolutely great example. He's got great stuff. The pedigree's there. But just lately, like you said, he hasn't been doing it in the minors. I don't know that the Rangers really wanted to call him up right now. You know what I mean? Like, if they had a choice, I don't know if they're making that choice. Now what I will say is, kind of take a left turn here for a second. We talked about depth briefly, and you talked about kind of GMs having to really make the best 26-man roster. Well, quite frankly, they also need to make the best 40-man roster, right? Because when we look at pitching depth, like, you go to DeGrom, and think about DeGrom for a second specifically as an example. I mean, you said he's making big money. He's making over $40 million a year, okay, to pitch every fifth day. Now, if I'm a GM and he hasn't pitched for me and I gave him that much money, Of course, I'm sitting there like, wow, what am I doing when, if I'm a small market team, $40 million is half of my whole payroll. If I'm a mid-market team, it's a third of my whole payroll, right? I mean, it is a ton of money. And so there is a risk benefit, like a kind of a cost benefit analysis there that is becoming trickier than ever. And it makes you wonder when a GM is building out a team and you look at that starting five. Now, I know this isn't the case for the Rangers, but let's just play this out. Say the Rangers are making a World Series run in an alternate universe. They're making a World Series run, same as this universe, but they're making a World Series run, but in this alternate universe, they have no starting pitchers of any merit or any experience, and they just have DeGrom. So what happens when you have a rotation of someone to the caliber of DeGrom, and you have a four other rookies in your rotation, and you lose DeGrom? Like, that becomes such a huge impact to a team, which is why it is more important than ever to have depth. You think you have an ace, you think you have a Spencer Strider, a Sandy Alcantara, a Jason DeGrom, but if you lose those guys for the season, you can't phone it in. And so you need an ace. You have ace number, ace is A. Your number two starter becomes I would say A1 or 1A. I reverse that. But, I mean, you know what I mean, right? Like, you need more quality pitchers in that rotation from 1 to 5 that can throw a number of innings. And that's more important than ever.
Yeah, 100%. And, when you said you gave that example of DeGrom and just a bunch of rookies, there are teams that may have to do that because they don't have the financial backing to bring in stars or bring in veterans who can support the starting lineup. And I think that's a really risky way to move forward. And if I was a team that was employing that type of rotation and lost DeGrom, I would take a little bit of time, go into a room, have a few tears would come, I'd have to do some breathing exercises, and then I'd come back out. And, I appreciate that how tough it is for a GM. And not only on that note, but, you got to keep the fans happy too, right? And the fans have expectations. So they have expectations of the pitching. They have expectation of the pitching depth. And they also just want to straight up win, right? That's all we want to do. We want to win. And I did enjoy your hypothetical run at the World Series note there too, Anthony. And just to remind everyone, we did that last year and we won. So I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah. Thank you, Adam, for the obligatory once a week reminder. I appreciate that. So I want to make this clear, though, what I just said, right? Like this whole scenario of it being DeGrom as your ace and then four other pitchers. I mean, that really doesn't happen in the sport, right? Obviously, these GMs are going to have the best rotation they have. Some of these rotations you see in the sport have legitimately three pitchers that could be considered aces, right? I mean, that's how you win championships, is really beefing up a rotation and your lineup. But like you said, Adam, not every team has that luxury, and they do need to get creative given their resources. Now, here's what I will say with all of this. We have been talking about the perspective of team building from a general manager standpoint. But I think there's something to be said about what does this mean for the role of starting pitchers. You know, if you go back into the sport and you look at kind of how this sport has evolved over the last, let's say, 40 to 50 years, you go back to the 1960s, 1970s, starting pitchers were exactly that. They were starting pitchers. They wanted every 5 days to give you 9 innings and go the whole way in a game. And the more that we've gotten to where we are today, you slowly have start to see pitchers pitch less and less. And so I start to wonder, and mind you, it's not because pitchers want to pitch less. I feel like you ask most pitchers in the league right now, they're like, I want to go 9 innings every day, which is great. That's the attitude you should have. But if these injuries continue to be this way, and we suspect it's because of workload and wear and tear, does the starting pitcher become not a pitcher that pitches 5, 6, 7 innings? Does it become more of an opener situation that we're seeing, where a starting pitcher does 3, 4, and you get more longevity out of them in a season? I mean, that, do we get to that point? Which is so weird that I'm asking that, because I love starting pitchers. I love when starting pitchers try to, you know, get no hitters, perfect games, and go the distance. But I don't know that that's sustainable.
That's a tough question, Anthony. And I think that if we really don't change how we operate at the youth level, then we may actually have to really consider changing what a starting pitcher does and what a starting pitching rotation operates to. But the flip of the coin is, and to keep us entertained and the potential of a no-hitter and a perfect game and a shutout and all these different things, is that I think we really need to look at development and how we are treating certain aspects of pitcher development. And, you know, I was listening to one of the many other baseball podcasts, as I do, because I just take it all in. And I heard a comment that I haven't seen in an article or whatever, but a host was at a youth development game, and there was a radar gun for kids. Like, no, that's, for me, is a straight no. And the host said, like, he saw it and he wanted to go over there and break it, because that's where the habit starts. It starts early and then it just keeps going and going. And I read a really good article on Tommy John surgeries, and the amount of Tommy John surgeries at the youth level happening today. And we shouldn't be putting these kids into a position where they need to go under the knife at such a young age. And it's pure, we don't have to do that. We don't have to do that. So I think that if we are able to, or if the MLB is able to go all in and change the culture of starting pitching, you know, 10% max effort, whatever they need to do, scientifically backed research and planning, we can still enjoy the starting pitching that we love today. And if you're unable to change the culture, and as you said before, pitchers want to throw 9 innings, and they want to throw 9 innings to max effort within the confines of the current rules. And that's also where you got to change the culture as well. You need to change the culture of the athlete in the now, and you need to change the culture of the development programs for the future. And I think if we do, we're able to continue how we operate, and maybe we may see more full nine-inning games from starting pitchers. But if we don't change that over the next few years and the coming decades, your idea of an opener, a mid-inning thrower, and a closer, it's going to be a thing. And how does that affect the starting rotation then as well? Do we need to make more spots for pitchers? How does that affect Labor getting the bank that they deserve as well, right? Because if you're throwing less innings, unfortunately, the franchises who are business first, then they will also look to reduce the cost associated with that pitcher. And I think it could be a detriment to the pitching community moving forward. So I think there needs to be a commitment to change how we do things at the youth development all the way through to changing the athlete mindset, which I think is going to be the toughest thing to do.
That was great. And I think that's the perfect way to end this conversation, because you did such a good job of kind of explaining why this is so challenging. There are so many different factors. This is really hard to solve, and there's so many factors at play between the pitchers, how we're developing in the sport, the culture of pitching, the business side, the economic side of it. So that is a great encapsulation of what makes this so challenging. And I'm glad we had the chance to talk about it. And quite frankly, folks, we're going to spend time tracking this, right? It's something that I know interests Adam and I know Parker is sure as heck interested. We talk about it all the time outside of these calls, or outside of these episodes that we do together. So we're going to keep tracking it. And as it happens, maybe we'll come back and revisit it, especially as we see how people in the sport respond to this this increase in pitcher injuries. But as we do every week, it is time for this week's Wild Pitch. And since Parker is not with us this week, he was kind enough to pre-record his Wild Pitch, because he, of course, wouldn't miss out on a Wild Pitch. How could you? How dare you if you did? So what we're going to do, Adam, is we're going to play his Wild Pitch here in a moment. We'll have him go first. But before we do that, why don't you fill in the fine folks on what this week's Wild Pitch is?
I would love to. And if I was to say that I missed anything apart from hanging out with you two lads last week, was I didn't get to have all the fun with Wild Pitch. So I'm happy to be back. The topic is, you guys had to come to me with a pitcher who went through a serious injury in 2023 or 2024 that is most likely to have the best career.
Very good. Very good. Topical. I love that. Fantastic. Let's start with Parker. We're going to go ahead and play Parker's Wild Pitch. So here it is.
What's up, guys? It's Parker. All right, so this is my pick and my pitch for a pitcher who missed 2023 and is poised to make a huge comeback. So in 2021, which is actually the last full season that this pitcher had before going down midway through 2022 to get Tommy John surgery, in 2021, he threw 207 in a third innings. And, you know, when you hear that number, maybe sometimes you think, oh, wow, this guy probably has a high ERA because he's just out there grinding out innings. Like, he's probably not somebody who, you know, is super effective for all of those innings. Well, that's not really the case with this guy, because he had a 2.47 ERA and a 171 ERA plus. That ERA plus led all of baseball that season. That year, he was an all-star, and he finished fourth in NL Cy Young voting. Oh, by the way, he also led all of baseball with 33 games started that season. This year, he's already made two rehab starts in AAA. He was actually hit in the hand by a line drive in his last rehab start and is still going to make his next start on schedule, because this guy's gritty. He's determined. He wants to get back to where he was before the injury. He has pitched 8 innings total in his 2 rehab starts while allowing only 5 hits that whole time in AAA. So I'm really excited to see what he can do, especially when you consider that he'll be rejoining a club that seriously needs him back and is under a lot of scrutiny and expectation this season. Anthony, that comes in at about 1:45, so you got your work cut out for you, sir. Good luck.
That's a pretty solid wild pitch, not going to lie. I could tell he got into that one. He's throwing some stats in there. Okay, that's fine. That plays. But let me go ahead and tell you a little bit about my wild pitch. So I really thought about this. I gave this a lot of thought, not going to lie. And the more I thought about this, I did visit someone that actually got injured here in 2024. And you know, Adam, I feel really bad for this fella. And here's why. Because he did just get injured last week. He underwent internal brace surgery after learning he had suffered some UCL damage. And we talked about that today. And this was a massive blow for him, of course, but for his team, who's definitely a World Series contender in 2024. But I'm so confident in this dude as a pitcher and as an athlete that this is merely a bump in the road for him and his best days are absolutely ahead. Why? Because he has a track record and because he has sheer tools. Okay, this righty has pitched 2 full seasons in Major League Baseball in 2022 and 23. In both of those seasons, he was 95th percentile or above in both whiff percentage and K percentage. His FIP is insane. Now, what's FIP? I'm glad you asked. No, it's not a name for a puppy dog. It's FIP, which stands for Fielding Independent Pitching. Now, what that essentially means is it's what a pitcher's earned run average is per game without considering the defense behind him, which, you know, he doesn't have control over. So that's FIP. And in 2022, his FIP was 1.83. In 2022, it was 2.85. That's nuts. That's less than 3 runs per game. And we all thought 2024 would be a massive year for this guy, because in 23, he led all of Major League Baseball with 20 wins, led all of baseball with 281 strikeouts, and led all of baseball with a strikeouts per 9 of 13.5. That means he averages 13.5 strikeouts per game. Nuts. And the real kicker, this guy's only 25 years old. So if you're asking me about someone who's going to have a great career, well, this guy's got a lot of career ahead of him. Yes, this injury in 24 is not great, but honestly, I can't say I'm too concerned. The guy's a hard worker. He has the body of a Greek god. He has a killer four-seam, slider, curveball, and change-up pitch mix with breaking pitches that, quite frankly, have guys buckling at the knees. Trust me when I say that we have many more years of watching this elite pitcher, and after he recovers from this injury, the sky's the limit. Sky is the limit.
Wow. Okay, so I'm gonna go with your one right now, Anthony. Not as a winner, but just, you know, I want to talk about yours first. And okay. I'm just going to throw a couple of numbers out there to kick us off. Anthony, what does the pairing 3 and 15 mean to you? That's the current White Sox record, but you're speaking about a player with pure hope. This wild pitch has brought hope from you in a time where there really should be no hope, but you have hope, and I felt it through my headset.
And I don't know whether to be offended or happy about that.
And I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. Now, Parker's pitch. I have one question for his pitch, and if he was able to answer me, he would have won today, but he's not here. So, I'm going to award today's pitch to the man of hope, a New Hope fan himself, Anthony.
Fantastic. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Small applause. Now, let's go ahead and reveal our respective pitchers. So, Parker's, I'll reveal his for him. Parker's was Los Angeles Dodger Walker Buehler, whereas mine was Atlanta Brave Spencer Strider. Both guys have had a tough go of it in the last few years with injuries, but needless to say, both are amazing pitchers that have incredible tool sets, and we're looking forward to seeing what they do, you know, once they get over their injuries. So that'll be fun to track.
I love both of those players, but as someone who picked Spencer for a little bit of a Cy Young award this year, I'm more than happy with my choice today. And for next week, I have a bit of a different wild pitch for you, lads. Yankees announcing legend John Sterling has retired or soon will be retiring. And I think that every ball club, every franchise needs that signature voice. And what my franchise needs is that voice. Recently fired the last one, wasn't tracking very well. I need someone. I need a legend. Doesn't need to be current. I want you to go back in time and find me the greatest baseball announcer and pitch that person to me so I can bring that person into my broadcast team.
Adam, this has blown me away. I can't tell you how excited I am for this pitch. This is the MVP of pitches, and I'm starting on it immediately. Great call. Oh, man, that is solid. Well, while I get excited about that and try to calm down, let's go ahead and wrap this up with our scouting report. So why don't you go ahead and remind us what the question was and kind of show you what I got.
Everyone, we were talking pitches. We're talking perfect games. What I needed from Anthony was three separate pitchers who had completed a perfect game. Over to you, sir.
Okay, I have this one, and I went into my kind of recent memory. So these are all guys that are definitely modern era guys and definitely guys that have pitched in the last 20 years because I remember them vividly. So I'm going to go with three guys. Randy Johnson, Roy Halladay, and of course, White Sox, Mark Burley.
You smashed it, Anthony. And other such noticeable pitchers was Cy Young, an absolute legend. And one of my internet baseball favorites, the greatest of them all, Dallas Braden.
Oh, Dallas, love Dallas. That's a gem of a stat.
Yes.
Oh, so, that was good.
Thank you, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a really good one. And thanks, Adam, for some good pitching conversation today. That was absolutely excellent. And that will wrap it up here on this week's episode, of course, of the Youtini Baseball Show. If you're already a member of the United on Patreon, we greatly appreciate you. Special thank you to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, and Raymond Bazinski on our High Council, and our captains, James T., Ashley Inglis, Colton Fife, and Chris Carrizo for their amazing support. Don't forget, you can interact with our baseball team on X. You can follow the show at Youtini Baseball, and you can find each of our individual handles right there in the show bio. The conversation doesn't stop here, friends. We're always talking baseball in our Discord, so be sure to hop into our baseball channel and join in on the fun. A huge shout out to our behind the scenes team. We have our editor Kyle for making our show sound great each and every week, and of course to my co-hosts Adam and Parker for being baseball rock stars. Support for this show and all Youtini Network podcasts come from the United Patreon community. At the heart of the Youtiniverse, the United is where our most passionate fans gather for a deep exploration of all types of fandoms. Star Wars, Marvel, Dune, Fortnite, Taylor Swift, baseball, the list goes on and on. We'll catch you next week here on the Youtini Baseball Show.